This is Justin Roloffs, and this is Street Level.
Well, you don't have to say that.
Okay. This is Justin Roloffs, and I feel good.
This is Tom Bombstead. A train is rolling by.
Pat Barrett here. This is Street Level. My name is Pat Barrett. In case you didn't catch it the first time, Pat Barrett. Everybody always calls me Todd. I don't know. It's because I kind of got a nasal voice or whatever, but, you know, on the phone. But this is on digital. So, Pat Barrett. It's like bullets, man. Like Pat Garrett, Kill Billy the Kid. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I like Panther the best.
Is that a stone sample at the end of Panther, or is it a very stone?
No, it's some like weird African like band.
I think it sounded a lot like Stones.
Really?
Yeah. And I was wondering, it's like,
okay, at the end of Panther.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if it was something that you did, but it sounded more like a sample.
No, man, it's actually from this like Ethiopian band.
Oh, no joke.
Yeah, like I think probably like in the 70s they did it or something, I feel like.
From the Ethiopiques.
I'm actually pretty unaware of the news in general. I have very little idea of what's going on, so I'm interested. I just haven't been exposed to much of it, or I haven't been having those conversations. Or.
So what is the news to you?
Pretty much like what's within my five senses, what I'm experiencing within my immediate like vision scape and hearing scape, soundscape.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trying to work with that. Everything else is hearsay. If it's not in that immediate five senses, then it's so just like hearsay.
That's very quantum.
So like if we talk about the war in Iraq right now, I mean, like, it's just hearsay. What do you do about the news and about, you know, knowing that war in Iraq is happening? He's like, you know, that's just hearsay.
Thank you.
man.
It's been forever, man. It's good to see you, dude. You look good, man.
Yeah, so do you.
Hell yeah. Hey, I got a six-pack of Modelo's out in the car. If you guys
bring
want
that shit in here.
I got some tamales and stuff from OLG, too. We got all
right on, man.
The recorder was on. What we're doing is just documenting a night, and then out of this has to come a podcast.
Oh, okay.
For Lawrence.com.
So we're creating.
And then we turn the thing over to, then it gets
give it to the president.
Right. We send it to George Bush.
And
for...
He reviews the tape.
For his...
and he calls Lawrence.com. Okay, is it?
That's it.
We give him an annotation. We get the green light, and we're good to go. And we just eat chocolate. On May 10th at the Jackpot, it would just be White Arc. White Flight playing White Arc. When I was making all of this record, I didn't have any... I had just come from, you know, like, basically living totally vagrant, camping, traveling lifestyle without, like, permanent access to any music or music equipment or... like recording music or electricity for a lot of the time in Guatemala. Like, I just got back from 6 months without electricity again.
Is it fresher to work with a limited palate?
Always, right?
No, I think so. Bombstein?
Oh, sure.
When you strip it down, it becomes a little cleaner, doesn't it?
Yeah, it seems like that's why in our culture and like, where we've evolved is, like, we have so much emphasis on so much of the outer reality and all the material things, and the more you strip that down in your own life, like, can often really help you have more clarity. Electrodes on the brain's place where you go for 7 days, right? And you have the biofeedback and it makes a sound. Whenever your brain is making alpha state, this machine will make this certain tone. So, alpha state is the state of joy, okay? And so, using this machine, you can train yourself to keep making this sound with your brain and find out whatever it is you need to do, like, to keep making this sound. And it helps a lot. I mean, generally, a good, clean diet makes for good health, and then you can have more opportunity to be, like, you know, harmonized in your body, mind. But
you think when your body's pure, your work
some
is
people,
pure?
Some people, I think, could, like, you know, just be eating hamburgers all day long, and it wouldn't affect their creative output in any way, so... It's just part of, like, my path has been to, like, experiment, monitor, observe... alter, manipulate the diet, you know. part of the exploration of consciousness, because there's one thing that I think most people, anyone that has experimented with their diet at all, like, diet is one of the quickest ways to change your consciousness, like changing your diet changes.
Were you guys ever on Scooby-Doo?
Now here it goes.
Yeah. God, that would be sweet. Be a cartoon. Yeah, that band was like out of high school, you know.
Yeah, for sure, man.
So funny.
Yeah, it was great. Like, there
was two blocks.
Yeah, I love all that Johnson County shit, man.
Yeah. Johnson County, you know.
That was the scene, man.
Growing up in the garage and playing.
Like, yeah.
Nirvana covers. Mexico. I lived in the pyramid, the main Maya pyramid complex, for about 3 moons.
How did you live there?
It was a really special situation where this horse caravan, this group that rides on horseback and lives off fire and totally has that sort of lifestyle, who had started in Costa Rica, made their way up into southern Mexico. The sort of pseudo leader of this group is fearless, in the sense that he will go straight into a town in Central America or Mexico, wherever they're at, and he goes straight for the president or the mayor or the governor, head honcho in charge. He explains, you know, we are this caravan, we are all about sustainable living and the environment, we plant trees, we put on shows, and he ends up making buddies because he's super charismatic. Right. And in Palenque, for instance, he made friends with the wealthiest man in town, whose family for hundreds of years has owned land right around the pyramids, like in the pyramid complex.
But isn't that it's federally protected?
It is, and that's why there was some friction, because for the first time there were all these, you know, young people with horses playing drums all night, camping in the pyramid complex. And, you know, the guards weren't so happy about this. But this man owns the land, and his family has for hundreds of years. And, I mean, he's got all the money.
He owns the land that's adjacent to the federally protected.
Well, it's officially in the federally protected area. Though it's not like, it wasn't like I was actually on the lawn with the pyramids. We were actually camped below. If you follow the main Maya water hole, their perfect swimming hole that they had that looks too good to be true, which you can't actually swim in that because that's like in the... I mean, there's like so many guards around it, but you follow the waterfall down, and it's just the most beautiful waterfalls and little pools all the way down, and we were just like not 5 minutes from the top.
What is it? What are you getting from being by the pyramids? What is it?
I mean, there in Palenque, it was a very powerful awakening and catalyst for psychic awareness.
Explain that, psychic awareness.
Well, for instance, before I even got to Palenque, I started to have some dreams that where I literally dreamed exactly what was going to happen, people I was going to meet there in Mexico. I was even given a name of a person that I eventually like met and saw him in a dream, and that was like before, you know, I even got there. So then, once I got there, it became quite ridiculous in the sense that I would dream almost anyone that would come to this gathering before they even got there. At first, I was kind of in disbelief, and then it started to the point where I'd even call it out, where it's like, oh, there's going to be a girl who has curly hair who plays the guitar with a nose like this, and she's bound to show up. And she would show up. And the thing was, I wasn't the only one doing it. There are many that were there camping that were having very similar experiences. Apparently, Palenque is related to, like, our third eye, I guess you'd say, our psychic center, as far as the pyramids are concerned. And so, people that stay there for any length of time, and especially the closer you get to the actual structures of the stone, you tend to have some really interesting experiences. And some of them aren't always comfortable. In fact, I'd say about half, you know, depending on how centered you are, you're going to get kind of thrown around like a roller coaster.
Would you say the pyramids are power places?
Yeah, I'd say they're amplifiers. They work just like an amplifier would, in the sense of, you know, whatever you're feeling, if you're sad, you're going to feel a million times sadder.
Does their structure have anything to do with that?
Yeah, I think their structure, given the sense that they're built out of these perfect geometries that reflect the third dimension and the nature of the third dimension, totally, that since they are built with these perfect dimensions, they act as like almost like a power plant would. I mean, pyramids themselves, like, for instance, in Egypt, all the pyramids pump water. In fact, in many of the ancient pyramids, there are still giant pools of water underneath them because they just naturally are formed with a geometry that will interact with the earth and draw water out of it. So the pyramids, I mean, well, different pyramids have different functions, and certainly they're, I mean, we could really go into it, but I think just in a general sense, I think of pyramids as amplifiers. Where did you get your tamales?
These are from Our Lady of Guadalupe Church. The girls who are competing for the queen of the Fiesta Mexicana.
No way.
Like, all do a fundraiser, and they serve food at the church Monday through Friday from 11 to 7.
I love Mexicans. Period.
I got a machete.
I've really gone into using my voice a lot, like really going into the registers, both low and high, just trying to open up the spectrum.
Get technical. Explain a bit of that. What do you mean by going into the registers?
When I first left Lawrence, actually, I ended up in Palenque, Mexico, in the jungle, right in the pyramid complex, and one of the first people I connected with was this Japanese guy who was a throat singer, and he literally was like, could do really low frequencies in his throat and really high harmonics.
Was he Tuvan?
He wasn't Tuvan. He was Japanese, but he had hung out with the Tuvans and was really into their sound. And he was also a didgeridoo player, which he had really been working with sound. And so I ended up traveling with this friend we traveled together for, you know, at least half a year. And together we were exploring a lot of sound, and he showed me the only time I had sung into my lower registers like that had been during a psychedelic experience, during some medicine where it just came out, and I couldn't believe it. I was just like, whoa, what's that? And then he showed me how I could consciously start practicing and going into my lower throat and into my chest with the sound, and then going up into the higher parts of my head And so it was exactly what I was already working on, and he just kind of was the perfect companion for this. And then since then, you know, I've really been thinking about sound in terms, especially in terms of healing and how it can heal the human body. Well, I think that we're in an interesting time now in the sense that that which was hidden is now becoming known and available on a mass scale.
Explain that.
Like, part of going down south was, I was sitting with my father the other day, actually, in our living room, and I suddenly remembered the conversation we had just before I left. And I told him the reason. He was like, well, why are you going down there? What is your mission, you know? And I told him...
Exactly.
I told him I wanted to learn about the Mayan calendar. This is the main thing I talked with him about. I want to learn about the Mayan calendar. I want to learn what 2012 is all about. And I know this is the area where the Maya are from. And I just want to figure out what this is all about.
Because, what is 2012 all about?
Well, all these prophecies have, you know... their calendar system, which many of them will record dates as far back as 16 million years.
Is 2012 an apocalypse?
In a sense, yes. But we're dreaming it collectively right now. So, like, as far as, like...
we're inventing it?
Yeah. As far as, like, the details, that's why anyone that claims to know the exact details, you can't believe them, because we're collectively dreaming it right now. That's great.
But what is all this adding? But what is all of this adding up to? Is it fuel for the music?
Is the it music
fuel for the expression.
The music is a byproduct, I believe, at this point.
But do you have the music in mind when you're going through the experiences, or is this just for your human development?
No. Like, for instance, all the music I made a month ago, when I decided I'm making a new record, and suddenly it all manifested right before my eyes. I didn't believe, even to the last minute, I didn't think I'd be actually making another record. I was at the point last spring where I thought, I'll never make another record.
And you made this with, like, a pretty hot band, with Rat-A-Tat guys, right?
They gave me all the beats, which is what allowed me to, like, really get in there quick. But pretty much I did most of it myself, just piling on top. I mean, I definitely had some help with some...
All right, break that down, the process. How you went to New York?
I went to New York.
Well, you came when you first came out to the States, you came in through San Francisco.
Yeah.
And then you hung out with the Rat-A-Tat guys there.
Yeah.
Did you do a couple of live performances?
Just one.
One.
And I connected with them. I didn't know why I was connecting with them, but I had a dream in Mexico where I was on stage playing with them in San Francisco. And I was like, what is this all about? Because I hadn't thought about those guys for a long time.
Did you know them previously?
I had known them previously, yeah. And we were friends, but like I said, I really hadn't thought of them in probably a year, you know? And suddenly I had this dream that was so vivid, and in these days I had been asking specifically for some guidance to come through my dreams, because I felt really freed up, and I was in southern Mexico, again, so freed up where it was almost intimidating. It was like, well, what do I do now? I realize I can do whatever I want. I manifest my own reality, so what should I do now, you know? And so I started to ask for help in my dreams, and I dreamed this dream that is so vivid where I'm playing on stage in San Francisco with these guys and hanging out with them backstage. And so I tell them via internet that I had this dream, and instantly get this, like, response from them. They're like, we're going to be in San Francisco in a few days, like, come and you can play with us.
Were they familiar with your...
I mean, we're friends. We're like old time friends.
All right.
But
had they heard the White Flight album?
They had.
Okay.
They had, and they really liked it. And so when they heard about my dream, they were like, "Well, if you can make it to San Francisco, like, that'd be great." And so I knew in my heart that I was supposed to go.
That it must have.
Yeah. And so I ended up going to San Francisco a few days later. I ended up on stage playing Hans Bronze's version of a song named Hildy. And then and I was wondering if I was supposed to go on tour with them or something, because I was like, this dream was so vivid. After hanging out with them that night, it was very clear to me that I was not to go on tour with them. Yeah. Not because of anything, like, blaringly. It was just, I knew in my heart that I'm not supposed to. So I really wondered, like, what am I doing back in America now? You know, like, or what is my mission here? And I ended up having some adventures those next few months. And now in retrospect, all the pieces of the puzzle fit so perfectly. This is what's interesting, is how it ties in, because I opened the portal in America with these my friends from Ratatat. And the way now I closed the portal was another whole year later, ending up in New York State and them helping me come up with all these beats and some parts of the songs. And I had a whole record by the end of it. Whereas when I finally got to Hawaii, Evan, the guy who makes the beats in Ratatat, was like emailing me these beats. He's just like, come make another record. He was like a major catalyst. He's like, I want to hear another White Flight record. So I was like, that's really kind. And he kept sending these beats and they were really fresh, but I was just so far away from thinking about making another recording at that time.
This time you're welcoming collaboration.
This is extreme collaboration.
Yeah.
I mean, I outputted the heart of the record there in the cabin alone, but there was, like, without, like, a serious host of these other individuals, like, there's no way this could have come
together. Did you feel comfortable in this collaboration?
Totally, because it was so perfectly magical. Yeah, everyone I was dealing with was just, like, cosmically, it was like a whole psychic situation where I didn't even have to, like, you know, think twice about whether, you know, things were coming together in the right way. It was just like I was autopilot. It was pure autopilot.
It was a hot, hot night there in the jungle, and all the people, they wear their prettiest clothes, and they went together around the fire, and I can see them dancing, invisible feet, la la la, la la la, invisible feet. It was a hot, hot night there in the jungle, man.
On May 10th at the Jackpot, it would just be White Ark, White Flight, playing White Ark. You got a pack of tin packs spread throughout every pocket.
Oh, my
God.
You know, it was
more than a mansion.